put this game to bed and get the Mets to Atlanta with one more left to win. 3-2. He struck him out, and the ball game is over. The Mets finally beat the Brewers in their final try. And in all probability, they will be heading to Atlanta tomorrow, needing to win one more game to get into the postseason in 2024. David Peterson was brilliant. The Mets scored early and often, and the Mets beat the Brewers 5-0.
Cisco, right off the bat, seemed like you wanted to push the pace today. You get on with the walk, steal second, and then score on Nimmo's base hit. How much did you consciously feel like you needed to set a tone here to start tonight?
I mean, I had the opportunity to run. Antoine did a good job of preparing us, and we knew we had a chance of stealing bases today, so we went out there and we did that.
David Peterson pitching the most important game of his life to date with an absolute gem. What did that show you about him?
I mean, he did what he's been doing all year long, so it doesn't really surprise me. I'm super proud of what he's doing. He continues to show out day in and day out, and he gave us a chance today to win, and that's what we did.
All right, barring something completely unforeseen in the ninth with the Padres, you guys head to Atlanta now, needing one win to get into the playoffs. What's the feeling, what's the mentality as you head, knowing just winning you're in?
We just got to go out there and do whatever we do, you know, just play the game the right way, understand what's in line, and don't take anything for granted, you know. Atlanta is a really good team, and we put ourselves in this position. So it's up to us. Our destiny is in our hands. We got to go out there and do whatever it takes to win.
Francisco, thanks.
Thank you.
I mean, it's a long, you've been at 6 months, 7.5, including spring training, for it all come down to one day. What do you even make of that?
I signed up for that any day, you know, especially with the way we started the year. Before the year, nobody expected us to be in this position, and here we are with a chance to do something special, and that's what we'll do. We'll go back to Atlanta, and we'll get that last one, and, you know, we'll go from there.
Before the game, Carlos said that he really liked the energy and felt like the team was pretty loose. What did you sense going in, and what did you see out there today?
Yeah, I mean, we've been kind of just talking about it. It's just like we got to keep it the same. We can't put pressure on ourselves. I mean, I've been saying this since we sucked and everybody kind of wrote us off. It's like, dude, we don't have any pressure. We aren't supposed to be here. We just can't get here now, and all of a sudden we put pressure on ourselves. You know, it feels like I've been kind of, you know, it's like the third or fourth time I've said this, and this team just plays better that way. And, you know, when we were just having fun, you know, messing with everybody in here, listening to Iggy's OMG song and making fun of him and stuff like that, and, you know, just having a good time, it's just, you know, it just takes pressure off everything. And, you know, especially in these games coming up, it's going to be the biggest thing for us.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, September the 29th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G. And don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to welcome in the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. I'm not going to make this one very long because the regular season is over for 28 teams, not two. And the Mets and the Braves will play tomorrow. I guess it's a day-night doubleheader. Is that what it is? Or a straight doubleheader? I don't even know. It's a straight doubleheader, actually. I'm sorry. To determine who will go on, if maybe both will go on to the wild card round. And, you know, that is exactly how, and that's the theme of the show, we knew it would have to be. You weren't going to get, if you were the Mets, to where you want to get without going past maybe your white whale or your dragon or your demon, whatever you want to talk about, whatever comparison you want to make. But what's amazing to me is that we talk about this stuff here all the time. We do a show every week, pretty much, even during the off season. I come to you now with the newsletter. I'm coming to you during the week. So you and I, this community that we've all built together, are constantly interacting, whether it's Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year, Valentine's Day, 4th of July. Like, we're always interacting throughout all the seasons. And what amazes me about baseball is we go through this long and arduous journey. It really is. The fans, too. You're going through it. You're burnt. I could tell. You needed those couple of days on the rainouts to recharge. And it was a tough weekend. I mean, look, for me, it was a tough weekend. I knew it was going to be a long weekend when I threw up my back on Saturday morning. I mean, the Saturday morning, you know, I'm getting old, you know, really disappointed about the Friday result. You know, jazzed up about, you know, potentially a big Saturday game for the Mets. Here I am cleaning the oven. I throw out my back. I mean, I was in significant pain. I was miserable watching that game last night. Miserable. So we're all kind of feeling it. And it's amazing to me that all the stuff we talk about, all the seasons you go through, you start on Valentine's Day, thereabouts, with pitchers and catchers, and then you start to develop the roster around St. Paddy's Day, and it's really, obviously, spring has not really completely happened when the season starts, and then you have your, you know, unofficial start of summer, Memorial Day, and we go through the getting to know you phase, and what does this team need phase, and go get it done phase, and then with this particular club, there's been seasons within a season. They're not competing off season into the early parts of the year, and then the miserable May and the, you know, burgeoning June, where you have Grimace and OMG, and this journeyman infielder comes on the squad, and believe it or not, that might be, in a lot of ways, Iglesias may not be Lindor in terms of production, but you can talk to him being every bit as important as Lindor for a variety of reasons as he comes in, and then you go through the summer and the ups and downs and this team being counted out over and over and over again, you know, whether it be early on, when I was even saying, hey, it's time to move on from these guys, right around Memorial Day, too. They played pretty good in June, but the bullpen was a disaster. Can this be sustained to those West Coast trips, the gnarly one where they lost three in Seattle, where you thought that was the beginning of the end, and then they had another one right after that with San Diego and Arizona. They had some gut-punching losses on that trip, losses that would have spiraled any team. And then this team, just to get to where they are right now, had to play well over 700 baseball and play at a high level, winning majority of their home games down the stretch just to get here, where they now need one more game to get into a wild card round. That all it does is give them the privilege to win two more games, to get to another round where they need to win three more games, to get to another round where they got to win four more games, and then another potential championship with four. So there's a long way to go. And that's why I think baseball, very similarly to the NBA, very similarly to the NFL, it's hard to win. And in some ways, it's a lot harder to win in baseball. Maybe not so much in the NBA with, you know, in with the kind of grind they go through, but more so than the NFL and maybe even hockey, where you have all this randomness. I mean, here are the Phillies winning 95 ball games, all set up, getting a bye, you know, potentially. And well, they will get a bye, and all they earn the right to play one of these teams that's been fighting for their lives maybe in another week or so. So, you know, that's all you really get. You earn the right to try to compete and win and stave off the randomness and the pressure of a short series. And the Mets have pretty much been playing postseason baseball now since, I mean, really the beginning of September. Nothing should really matter. Now, you heard coming in some of the comments from Francisco Lindor and J.D. Martinez. And the interesting thing about J.D. Martinez is that he's been the one throughout the year that I think has come closest to addressing the yoke that is around this organization's neck. Not this team, this organization's neck. This organization, and if you don't believe it by now, I mean, here, a new owner, new president of baseball operations, new front office. I mean, there is nothing connected for the most part. Yeah, there's a couple of players that were around when the Wilpons were owners, but there's nothing connected to prior regimes or anything that has to do with prior failures of the New York Mets with this current group. But they are feeling the anvil of expectations. They are feeling the pressure that has been the mark of this organization every year since they won the championship in 1986. They've been chasing 86 for a long time. What's funny is, and maybe this is really where it started, is that because that team failed to become a dynasty, because that team left the fans and the media wanting, it's almost like every iteration since then has been punished for the sins of that group. Really. I mean, that's really to put the yoke into those basic terms. It's chasing 86. And I don't know if this group will win a championship and erase 86, because the next group to win a title will. They'll put 86 in the closet and they'll be the most recent champions, and a generation of fans will be looking to them just like guys like me and guys who before me look up to AG and Don Clendenin and Keith Hernandez and Gary Carter. Whatever team was your team, you know, the next group will be that. But they don't have to win a championship, this group. But this group has to push back the immense disappointment and strain that has befallen this organization, where anytime there is a blip in the road, anytime there's an opportunity to go worst case scenario, it seems to go that way. And for a while this week, up until today, and there's still work to be done, this was starting to look every bit like some of the down the stretches that you saw in 1998, that you saw in 2001, that you saw in 2007. You know, and we talk about the 2015 team, and as you continue to look forward here and look at how hard it is for the Mets to really run from their history. And look, history got the 2015 Mets. History got them in the end. And maybe that's amplified the yoke, because they were really darn close in 2015 to winning a title. And that wild season that really started around July 31st, a season that really was only a partial season, a team that played a good 16 weeks. In a lot of ways, that season, the way it ended, how horribly they lost to Kansas City, where they could have easily won that series in five versus losing it in five, I think amplified the yoke. And ever since then, the Mets have been chasing it. And you heard Pete Alonso earlier in the month, right before the homestand, talking about how losing the division to the Braves really stuck with them and carried over into the San Diego series, which explains a lot about their performance. And you could see how this team, and J.D. Martinez even talked about it, how they were feeling the pressure going into the week starting in Atlanta. And it seems like, again, for the second time this year, as a group, they basically said, hey, blanket, nobody expects us to win. The fans don't expect us to win. The media's got their knives out waiting to LOL Mets us. Blanket, let's just go out and have fun and play. And it worked again. Now, I don't know if they're going to take that tomorrow with them, because tomorrow is going to be very, very interesting. They're facing their own Mike Scott. I mean, Schellenbach here is... It's interesting about Schellenbach. Am I saying his name right, by the way? Schwellenbach. You know, that's a tough name. He doesn't pitch well against under 500 teams, but he saves his best stuff for the contenders. Most of his good work is coming against the Mets and the Phillies. He's 4-0 against them. I mean, he's given up one run against the Mets in 14 innings. Now, part of me says the law of averages is out there ready to say, hey, the guys do. And if you look at the numbers, sometime between pitches 25 and 55, which would be somewhere in the second and third inning, between the third and fifth inning, maybe the second time around the order, you can get to him. The Mets are going to have to do that. Now, the Mets are going McGill in game one. It seems like they're holding back on Severino. But the most important thing here is the Mets had to go through this. The Mets have to go through this Atlanta thing. When I was on Anthony Rivera's Subway to Shea show a few weeks ago on a Sunday night, he brought that up for the first time, that they have to go through this. There's no avoiding Atlanta. And granted, after the rainouts, you and I were sitting around. Believe me, all the Mets had to do was win one more game this weekend, and maybe Friday's a little different with some better umpiring. But that's a peripheral opponent. We don't want to get into that. That's not what we do here. You focus on what you could control. The Mets could still have controlled winning, and they didn't play well enough to win. But it could have been easier, where tomorrow wouldn't have meant a hill of beans for the Mets, and they could have maybe even avoided playing those games. But you knew in the back of your head that this was going to be decided between the Mets and the Braves in Atlanta, and whether it be last week on regular schedule or because of Mother Nature on a doubleheader, this is the way it has to go down. They're going to have to beat a young pitcher who nobody thought about earlier in the year that has dominated them. They very well may have to beat the Cy Young winner in Chris Sale. They're going to have to do it in Atlanta. I don't know what kind of crowd is going to be down there, but I can tell you I have friends that are down there, and I know darn well that those fans, the South in general, that's the team of the South, has no love for New York. They would love nothing more than to have the Mets head on a stake. They would love nothing more than for the Mets to walk out of there with two losses and another season of disappointment. And you know the media would love for that to be the case so they could hang another, you know, A on the Mets like a scarlet letter and talk about how they can't beat the Braves no matter who's the manager, who's the president of baseball operation, who's the owner, who's at first, who's on the mound. And you know what? If the Mets can't pull it off tomorrow, as much as that's poppycock and nonsense, it's got some validity because this team has had a great season. I never was in the camp that they were punting. I just looked at it as they were looking to go about managing their payroll and their roster differently. Because David Stearns has shown a New York fan base that you can go out and get value-driven players like a Luis Torrens, a Jose Iglesias, a Danny Young, and patch together some component parts of your roster. You don't need to have a star at every position. Okay, you can give young players like a Mark Vientos a chance to prove themselves. You can do that. You can go out and find pitchers that are not on the scrap heap, but maybe not reaching their potential, like a Sean Manaea or someone who's looking to regain their status of the game like Luis Severino, and make it happen with some good coaching, good analytics, good player development. All the things that Cohen's money promised. It wasn't just going out and signing a Max Scherzer or a Justin Verlander or a Carlos Correa. It was also investing in the organization and some of the things that go into player performance. They've proven that, but all that doesn't matter if the Mets can't close the deal tomorrow. Now, not closing the deal tomorrow is not going to change Stearns as president of baseball operations. Carlos Mendoza is still going to be the manager. And look, the platitudes of it was a good season, but we fell short, aren't completely going to ring hollow. In a vacuum, in a cold, analytical decision-making world, that 100% is how you have to look at it if you're David Stearns. But we're not living in the rational world. We're looking at this now. I'm putting on a Mets fan hat right now. I'm going to make you and I, you know, I always look at myself as the bridge. I don't want to, you guys know I'm a Mets fan. It's clear I'm a Mets fan. But I never want you to feel like I'm too on one side, because that's not what this show is about. This is not a fan show. I'm not an organizational mouthpiece. I'm very balanced about what this thing is all about. But if they lose tomorrow, the sun will come up and you still have to feel good about Cohen, Stearns, Mendoza. But you have to take a hard look about who comes back from the core players next year. Now, you may have no choice on Pete Alonso. He may just price himself out. But I think it's all on the table. I think you have to look at Brandon Nimmo and the kind of season he had. I think you have to look at, you know, if it comes down to an Edwin Diaz blows a save tomorrow and is part of the reason why they don't make it, you have to look at him. You have to start to think about some of the young players that could be part of the mix. And I think this is a conversation that will happen. A Jet Williams who's knocking on the door, maybe a Drew Gilbert who had an injury plague season. Maybe he's going to be ready soon. Ronnie Mauricio will be back in the mix, and that might make you rethink, hey, do you move on from a Jeff McNeil, even though he hasn't been part of this down the stretch? You know, learning about how this organization ran itself and how they went out and found component-driven players that fit into the culture, can they continue to do that? Are they building something here where, you know, similar to, I don't want to say they're the New England Patriots, because the Patriots, it took a long time, but you start fitting guys into roles, and by coming into the culture, you can have the next Harrison Bader, the next Tyrone Taylor, the next Danny Young, the next Alex, you know, whatever it may be. Those are things that are out there that make you wonder, you know, do you move on from players who are going to have failure stuck to them? Now, the one guy you can't really move on from is Lindor, because he's not really been the problem. And if you look at it today, the blueprint for what this team, when they're at their best, what this team needs has not changed from day one. It's good starting pitching, getting into the sixth, seventh inning, check, good job, David Peterson. Elite performance from their core players. Nimmo got a big hit. Lindor played big today. And good bridge work to the bullpen, which you only needed Phil Maton. And then Diaz getting the job done in the ninth inning. That's the blueprint. And I'll tell you what. The amazing part about this season is the two names that have always drawn ire from me and drawn scorn from the fan base and always seem to annoy you, David Peterson and Tyler McGill, very well may go down as the reason they make the postseason. First of all, there is no doubleheader tomorrow without Peterson. 10-3 record, continuously pitching late into ball games. I know the advanced metrics say the guy's been lucky. I'm sorry. He's going out there making big pitches when it counts. This is a case where my eyes see a pitcher that knows how to get the job done. And maybe when he doesn't have his best stuff, he bends a little bit, but he's not been breaking. He's broken a couple of times, and that may be the case that he can't get, you know, what happened against the Phillies, and they even dinked him a little bit. Some of that was a little bit of BABIP that game, but that will happen. And then look, they're going with McGill in game one. Now, I know what the Mets are trying to do here. They're trying to hold Severino back for the postseason as much as possible. And in a lot of ways, once they heard that Sale wasn't starting, and the Braves are playing this game too, where they're hoping just to win without using Sale. They're both kind of playing to win, but keeping an eye on the next series, which I'm always the kind of guy that's like, hey, win tomorrow. You're not guaranteed a postseason berth until you win. Worry about the wild card series when there's something to worry about. Now, I think the bad news, or the real bad news for the Arizona Diamondbacks, is this is all set up for them to be the real big loser. Because once one of these teams wins, I don't see them putting effort into the second game at the same level. Because they're in the postseason. I don't think that you're going to be playing for, you know, all out to jockey whether to play San Diego or Milwaukee. They're both tough places to play. They're both teams that are tough to beat. I don't see one as being an easier matchup than another. And guess what? I don't like to play that game. And if you listen to me on the Twitter spaces with Anthony Rivera this past week, when you tank to get into a position, inevitably when you play that team, it turns out that team is the team that's too tough for you to beat. Well, that team shows you a side of them where you're like, hey, this is a little harder than I thought. You just got to play to win. Let the matchups be dictated by playing well. And if they're a postseason team, the team you're playing, they're good. They're good. And they're going to be, and a lot of times, even if their record states or their run differentiation states, when you put competitive big league players in a spot where they have a trophy or a prize or they have to play at the next level, you'd be surprised what some of these guys produce. So, to me, tomorrow is a defining moment for some guys on this roster. It's not a defining moment for Stearns and for Mendoza or for Cohen. They're going to be around. But for this group, for the McNeil, Alonso, Nimmo, Diaz, these holdovers from 2022, and I don't think that any of these guys, you know, the guys that have contracts like Nimmo or McNeil are going to be easy to trade, nor would I just dump them. But it at least brings the conversation. Look, they all have big contracts. Diaz, to me, if he flops tomorrow, how does he come back? And I don't think it's that you don't want to just release him or give him away, but you have to start thinking, hey, are some of these guys better being away from the stench of failure, from the yoke, from chasing 86? We talked about this on Memorial Day. We were a hair away from this thing being ripped apart, from having a really tough conversation about some of these guys about 3 months ago. They played well, whether it be Grimace, OMG, whatever. They played well, and they eliminated that possibility. But now they need to finish the deal. Because if they finish the deal and they make the playoffs, look, they're not in a great position to advance past either Milwaukee or San Diego. Let's be honest here. They're basically going to have to probably wear out their bullpen tomorrow. I think it was important, by the way, to get Diaz in today because I didn't want him having more than a week. He needed some work going into the doubleheader. Is he available both games? We'll see. But they're not, you know, the energy and the drama and the exertion that they're going to have to put forth to get into the postseason puts them at a little bit of a disadvantage in a series that, with a three-game set where it's 2 out of 3, you don't have time to fall behind. You fall behind 1-0, that's it. You have to win out. It's not a 7-game series. It's not like 86 where they were basically drained from Houston and they were able to recover after losing the first 2 games at Shea Stadium to the Red Sox. It's not like that. I mean, look at the Cubs. The Mets got hot. They stomped on their throat. They didn't let them up. Before they knew it, the series was 3-0, and they hadn't even got into it yet. That's kind of how these 3-game wild card series go. You go in, you have no time to breathe. So tomorrow is going to be a referendum on some guys, and I'm not saying if these guys come back next year, it's impossible for them to turn around, but failure will continue to follow them. The failure for Diaz of 2019, the failure of the core to get anything going offensively during the San Diego series in 2022, the failures of last year. And you have to start to ask yourself, with some of these young offensive players like a Jet Williams, like a Drew Gilbert, like a Ronnie Mauricio, adding it with Vientos, which Stearns has shown a knack for being able to put together production from different facets, ways that you don't really think about it, you have to wonder if we've seen the last of a Pete Alonso. If they'll really consider saying, hey, let's see what we could get for a Jeff McNeil, who's on a reasonable contract. And look, I'm not saying trade Nimmo. He's a team leader here, but he didn't have a great season. It's not like he's been hitting the tar out of the bowl. He goes out there and goes 0 for 8 in the doubleheader, or 0 for, you know, 1 for 9 and makes big outs with runners on base. You have to question him as well. Now, maybe there are things behind the scenes we don't know about, injuries and things like that, that are causing some of this. Okay. But what I do know is that Mets fans are damaged from years of failure. And when players get brought in, they get pretty much the benefit of the doubt. I mean, when Pete came in, clean slate. Diaz came in, you know, all these guys, when they come over, they get a clean slate. Let's face it. They get some time. With the exception of the few that usually come over, like when you come over from the Yankees, you don't get a clean slate. You get off the bat. And when you get a big contract, the Mets do beat you up. The fans do beat you up. But they wait a little bit before they beat you up. They don't beat you up day one. Yeah, they give you a little bit of rope. Not much. But when you fail, I mean, look at Carlos Beltran. He never was, they never forgave him for strike three. A Hall of Fame curveball from Wainwright. You didn't know who Wainwright was. They never forgave him. They'll never forgive this group. If this group doesn't make the postseason and they go down and they lose to Atlanta, down in Atlanta, and they do it, let's say, in a heartbreaking fashion or in a lifeless fashion, it doesn't matter which way, all winter, there's going to be talk. Now, maybe Diaz doesn't even pitch and he doesn't become part of it, but there'll be talk. There'll be talk about all the saves he blew during the year, about how they wouldn't even have to be here. Hey, if Diaz is normal, they're battling the Phillies for a division title. And that's no joke. Look at how many games he's blown. Winnable games. Not just games recently. The best thing for the Cohen, Stearns, Mendoza year one is to end with a postseason berth. That will show the rest of the league that this is a team that actually is on a trajectory of competition and competing. You have to think some of the narratives from blowing it up and selling off and the way that they marketed it a little bit with Billy Epler and Cohen made some agents doubt how serious, or some players doubt how serious they were about winning. They're clearly serious about winning. They clearly have a good manager. They clearly have a president of baseball operations that knows what he's doing, and he continues to build out his organization. Do they have the right mix? Do they have the guys that really understand and know how it is to play here and the stress and the pressure of chasing 86, how that's come into play? You just heard J.D. Martinez talk about it. He's been here less than a year, and he's feeling it. Here's a guy that he played for the Red Sox. He's won championships. He's been an elite hitter for a decade plus, and he comes here and he's feeling the yoke. Think about that. It tells you how strong it is. How much power the fan base is. I mean, you guys saw the negative energy all off weekend. Admit it, you were waiting to be put out of your misery today. You didn't expect to win. Now, Some of you probably still don't expect to win tomorrow. Everybody's waiting for the roof to cave on their head. That's why it's going to take a special group to say, I know what you guys are feeling. I feel it. I feel all this negative energy around me. And energy and bad energy is a thing. It's not some voodoo. Even if it's not physically there, they hear it. They feel it. And I don't care. We're going to push through this and we're going to do something special. And after that, I'll tell you what. If the Mets get in tomorrow and that energy, and that's all lifted off their back, I think they're playing with house money after that. I'm serious. Because that's what could make them dangerous going back to Milwaukee, going out to San Diego. Hey, they hit a notch where I don't think anybody, including their own fans, are going to kill them for losing in the wild card round. They'll be disappointed. And if they blow games, there'll still be conversations about some of the things we just talked about. But perhaps there'll be a little bit of a rope, so to speak, because of how things went down. I mean, this truly is a battle that is only one that Mets would actually be put into. I mean, a doubleheader day after the season ends in Atlanta because of rain. I mean, only the Mets would be put through this. And I guess it's in line with what this season's been all about. The early season, the doldrums of May, the grimace OMG love affair, and then the go-get-it-done phase post-trade deadline where this team had to play. I mean, if they didn't play at the level they've played at, they wouldn't be sniffing the postseason right now. I mean, I did not think it would take 89 wins to, you know, really 90 wins almost to get it done. I thought 85, 86, and the crazy part is, and maybe this will be something we do after the season, typically you get to 86 wins, you're good. That's it. I mean, they paid .652 ball going into today's game in September. They're going to end up winning 2 out of 3 in September. And that might not be good enough. As of today, it's not good enough to make the postseason. I mean, they played .594 baseball in the second half. They've won 27 one-run games. I mean, 62, over .620 winning percentage of that. I mean, they've done a lot of good things. Going to finish over .500 on the road, but it's not going to matter if they can't win one in Atlanta. And they have to win one in Atlanta. This organization needs it. It's not a matter of it be nice. They have to. They have to do it to move forward. If somebody's going to break this yoke of 86, I feel like this Mendoza, Stearns, Cohen, whatever group they bring in, this is the first push away from that. To show the fans, hey, we're not your father's Mets. We're not the Mets like 98, like 01, like 07, like the end of 2015 that can't get the job done when victory seems to be in your hands. I mean, think about it. If Juris Familia doesn't quick pitch Alex Gordon, who knows what that World Series looks like. The Mets have a title, and maybe things are completely different. Mets history is completely different. If Terry Pendleton doesn't hit one out, maybe Mets history is completely different. This team has a chance to make history different and prove with everybody's knives out. The fans are waiting to be miserable tomorrow. You know that. The media can't wait to get their knives out. Nobody thinks they're going to win, but every time this team has got its back to the wall, Lindor steps up, the pitching steps up, they find a way to win with the bullpen and Diaz. Why not tomorrow? Why not this group? So that's all I got for you on this Sunday evening. Just a couple hours after the Mets defeat Milwaukee. Game one, Tyler McGill, Spencer Schwellenbach. Game two, to be decided. You know, who knows what the Mets will do. It'll probably be a bullpen game of some sorts, maybe, if they win. And I really think that in the end, what my prediction is they split. I don't know if they win the first or the second game. It doesn't matter. They split, and Arizona's the big loser tomorrow. Because asking when a team that has to win one game for them to play hard for them in the second game when they're facing the travel to game one of their series, it's not realistic. And honestly, that's where if Arizona had won another game this weekend, then it'd be a different conversation. And there'd be far more pressure on both of these clubs, and it's a much different conversation and a much lower probabilistic chance that we would see both the Mets and the Braves in the postseason. And I don't know how Mets fans would feel if they had to win both of the games of a doubleheader on the road, because winning a doubleheader both ends is tough to begin with. So anyway, so what comes next? So I believe I'm going to be doing a Twitter Spaces tomorrow night. I'm going to try to see if our friend Anthony Rivera could do it. If he can't, I'm going to do one on my own. One way or the other, I'm going to do a Twitter Space tomorrow. The next show, the Reaction Podcast, probably comes out the day of Game 1 or the early morning of Game 1 against either Milwaukee or San Diego. And if they lose and there's no postseason baseball, there'll be another recap show. You know, that'll be a little bit different, so stay tuned for that. But continue to go to TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, for updates. Subscribe to me on Substack, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG or at TalkingMetsNoG on X for the spaces, which have gone really well. Great commentary. They get recorded, so you could, even if you miss it, you can listen to it the next day or later on. So tons of fun. Those Twitter spaces are something that we're going to incorporate more into the repertoire during different times of the off-season and in-season, whether it be me with another influential content creator, or who knows, we could always figure something out. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter. Sign up for what's less than a cup of coffee a month. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm yours, Mike Silva. Enjoy the doubleheader tomorrow. Buckle up. It's go time. Till next time, take care, everybody.
Meet the Mets. Head for the